Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff and for Joe Donahue. 12 minutes after 11 o'clock. In more than a century of vampires and pop culture, only one Lord of the Night truly stands out, Dracula. Though the name may conjure up images of Bela Lugosi lurking about in a cape and white pancake makeup in the iconic 1931 film, or maybe Christopher Lee with burning red eyes in those Hammer films, the character of Dracula, a powerful, evil Transylvanian aristocrat who slaughters repressed Victorians on a trip to London, was created in Bram Stoker's 1897 novel of the same name, a work so popular it has spawned limitless reinventions in books and films. In fact, every time we're subjected to yet another movie about a sniveling teenage vampire, we can, to some extent, thank Bram Stoker. But where did Dracula come from? Well, Jim Steinmeier answers the question, and it's a fascinating look at both Dracula and Bram Stoker. The name of the book is Who Was Dracula? Bram Stoker's Trail of Blood. Jim is a renowned historian of stage magic. He's the acclaimed author of The Glorious Deception and Hiding the Elephant, a Los Angeles Times bestseller. He's also a leading designer of magic illusion who has done work for TV, Broadway, and many of the best names in modern magic, and has twice received fellowships from the Academy of Magical Arts. He joins us now to talk about who Dracula was. Jim Steinmeier, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ray. It's great to be here.
You know, this book shapes up. It's a great read. It shapes up as part history, part mystery, a psychological jigsaw puzzle with maybe a couple pieces we'll never find. And I found it fascinating that to find out who Dracula is, we have to find out who Bram Stoker was. Initially, upon starting the book, he didn't seem like a very interesting fellow. But as you took the layers of the onion off, it became quite an interesting study of this, and how much of Bram Stoker is in Dracula.
It's interesting because a friend of mine, a big Dracula fan who read this book, read the manuscript, said to me that he thought that whole notion of Stoker as a kind of man standing in the shadows, a man behind a great man, which was his profession, he worked for England's leading actor, that allowed Bram Stoker to be a kind of sponge, unobtrusively kind of in the middle of big situations, big personalities, yeah, big controversies in Victorian London. But at the same time, it was not about his own personality, and that really was the secret to how this character was created, is that Stoker could take all of these people and situations and scandals and synthesize them into this book. And if he had been a stronger character, a more famous man, a more effective novelist even, he might not have put the pieces together that way.
So you mentioned that he worked with one of the leading actors, and he worked for Henry Irving.
Right.
And who, in himself, is an amazing character. And one of the beautiful parts of your book is the way you describe his craft in his theater and creating illusions. Was that maybe what drew you to this originally?
That's really interesting. I think that probably is. I was always aware that Dracula was a story that came out of the theater, that it was around people of the theater, and there was a certain theatricality to how it was told, how it was imagined, and then how it eventually did make it onto the stage. And then years ago, about 30 years ago, I had the honor of knowing Orson Welles and working with him, and he was actually the first one who said to me that The secret of Dracula is Henry Irving, this actor.
Yeah.
He believed, actually, that Irving was the inspiration completely for the character. I don't believe that anymore. I think it's a much more complicated story than that. But I think that the key to it lies in Irving and his associates, to a great extent, and the fact that Stoker was in that circle and observing those people.
Well, and the associates, I mean, through this beefsteak club, the list of people that he did list when he wrote the book about Henry Irving, is phenomenal. So he was really in contact, maybe as a second party, to all of the big names in London at that time. And, you know,
go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that people have tried to psychoanalyze Stoker, and I don't think I've tried to not do that. I've tried to absolutely go the other route, which is to not ascribe motives to him. I think it's really enough for us today when you tell the story of the author of Dracula and how this was composed. When the door opens and you see who walks through this door, the friends of Stoker, the associates of Stoker, the people he was dealing with every day, the scandals he was in the middle of, and dealt with quite quietly and logically, it's amazing to realize that this was all happening as he was composing this book. As I said in the introduction, you know, we could ask, did these characters play a part in the book? And I think we could equally say, how was it possible that they didn't play a part in this book? Yeah. Because he was living right in the middle of these stories at that time.
We're talking with Jim Steinmeier, who has a new book called Who Was Dracula? Bram Stoker's Trail of Blood. And I got to say, I laughed out loud. I think it was in your introduction. You described trying to fight your way through this book as an 8 or 9 year old. And I got to tell you, I remember slogging through this when I was in 6th or 7th grade and being shocked. I mean, it's a big, fat book. It's not an always easy read for a kid. And even 30 years later, I remember being surprised that, oh, gosh, this is not Bela Lugosi. This is not Christopher Lee. This is something else. And it's a bit amorphous. It's almost as if you create your own Dracula. And I wonder if this was by Bram Stoker's design or whether he just didn't really understand.
I would say that is the great mystery. But he succeeded. Whatever it was, whether it was intentional, whether it was an accident, he succeeded. He was not a brilliant novelist, and I think we can say that kind of safely because his novels before that and after that were not very successful. Many of them were kind of dashed off haphazardly. Dracula, he certainly spent more time with, and it was his most successful novel during his lifetime. But the secret to it is, just as you said, I think the secret is that Dracula himself is very little defined in the book. He becomes a kind of mysterious force, a kind of pestilence. It's almost as if he doesn't have a personality as the book proceeds. And what that means is that every generation, when Dracula is reimagined, when it's brought into a new media, when it's reinvented, the character is reinvented. So in the 1920s, he becomes a kind of jazz age male vamp. And by vamp, I mean, you know, a kind of seductive Lothario. You know, Bela Lugosi looked an awful lot like Rudolph Valentino. You know, the kind of patent leather hair.
Yeah.
You know, sort of Hungarian Rudolph Valentino. And that was the image of the the sexual predator, the dangerous man coming into society. And so that Dracula was completely reinvented in the 1920s, and that's what we see now in the 1931 film. But, of course, he keeps getting reinvented every time the subject comes up again. So Christopher Lee played it completely differently, and Frank Langella, and of course, now, you know, Dracula is reimagined in the Twilight series. Of course, it's a vampire story,
yeah.
Not Dracula. But he's a disaffected teenager, and that works perfectly. And it's perfect. It's a perfect way of introducing that character and appealing to a new audience. So I think Stoker, by design or by accident, he was a genius at creating this character that we can always recast in different ways and make the story work.
It's funny, you know, I was thinking as I was reading your book and big passages, or not passages, but descriptions of the book, and reminding me, you know, jazz players will sometimes say they talk about playing not the notes, but playing the spaces.
Yeah.
And it seems like Stoker did that, although he was far from a jazzy dude, I would say.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think what's really interesting about the book is how the tone of it really changes. There's a big, long section in that book, which is kind of stultifying, and I share your
pain,
your patience as an 8 or 9 year old trying to read it, thinking this is the book to read, because
yeah.
it's just full of kind of Victorian sensibilities, and it's about people sort of tracking this guy. They're analyzing. You know, moving records. They're analyzing shipping records. They're analyzing train records, and this book goes on and on, almost like a mystery. You're kind of wondering when this is going to get to some action.
Yeah,
it's a surprise, I think, to modern readers to encounter that in this book, which we think is you know the Bela Lugosi story. But I think that he really made it work on so many different levels, and you can see that even in the reviews. While it wasn't a huge hit in his lifetime, people recognized that it was something different and it was something significant.
It's funny, you know, you talked about this being such a huge step up for his writing quality. You brought up this little snarky note from H.P. Lovecraft who says, you know, obviously this was rewritten.
Right.
Because it was so different. And the research that you have done and others have done shows just how many years of notes and timelines and preparation that Stoker did to make this thing happen.
I think the surprise to everyone was in the 1970s. It wasn't me, but it was other authors on the subject who discovered his notes that had just surfaced in a private library in Philadelphia. And before that, I think everyone knew that Stoker's books were written kind of quickly and haphazardly. when he was on vacation very often from the theater. And so people assumed the same was true of Dracula. They composed a timeline where it was written, you know, over the course of a year, probably around 1895, 1896. Mm. And then when his notes were found, and his notes are very, very good and really complete about the composition of this novel, everyone realized that he had taken 7 years to write this book. So he plotted it meticulously, and we can see his care as a man who ran a theater in terms of train timetables and shipping and details. All of that was very, very carefully worked out before he started writing the novel.
Well, we have a couple of minutes left here, a few minutes, and I'll throw a couple names at mm-hmm. you, and I don't want to give this book away, but Oscar Wilde, how on earth, without reading the book, could you connect Oscar Wilde to Dracula?
Well, you can't believe it. He's one of these names that walks through the door. It's even more than that. They were childhood friends, Wilde and Bram Stoker, in Dublin. Their careers started really on a parallel path. They came to London, both with literary aspirations. By the time Wilde arrived, he was really a literary star. And they shared the same woman, in a sense. Florence, who later became Bram Stoker's wife, was Oscar Wilde's first fiancé in Dublin.
Ah.
And so they were really linked in London society. And then when Wilde had his scandal, which was happening right when Dracula was being composed, Stoker really wrote him out of the history, went back and took his name out of the history of the Lyceum Theater. He was so scandalized by mm-hmm. his behavior. So I think we see a lot of that scandal working its way through the story.
And Walt Whitman, there's a connection with Walt Whitman and Jack the Ripper. And the Jack the Ripper, it was happening as this was going to press, I believe.
It happened just before he started to compose the novel. And so clearly all those crimes were, and he admitted in a later introduction to the book that the Jack the Ripper story was a factor in the composition of it. He might have actually had dinner with the leading suspect of that case. There's really tantalizing evidence that they met. And it would be fascinating to know what that conversation was all about.
Well, there's obviously too much for us to get into in a minute and a half, but I would recommend to our readers, if you have any interest in this subject, you will find more to chew on in this book than you can believe. Jim Steinmeier, a heck of a good job, and I hope maybe down the road you can take a look at Henry Irving and how he put on some of those productions, the descriptions of the limelight and the colored effects, and all this stuff must be tremendously interesting to somebody with your background in magic.
We think we've all invented it today, but it's amazing what it was like 150 years ago, what they were doing on stage.
Great book, Jim Steinmeier. Thanks for being here, my friend.
Thank you.
Jim Steinmeier's new book is Who Was Dracula? Bram Stoker's Trail of Blood. It's published by Tarcher, and you are listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.